as you said before, the details of the decision, it appears to be different.
So you're going to have that element also that can be given
doubts, right? There may be doubts due to that.
Because then we may see is that you're chanting nicely so that the prayer for some of Krishna might take them away. Because it'll bring you closer to that. Right? So, or he may give them. You know what I'm saying? Or someone's not chanting attentively, is not interested so much in Krishna consciousness. Krishna might give them more material facility. You know, that they'll either be distracted and go away, or they'll see the material facility comes in Krishna consciousness, so they'll be involved because of the material facility. And then as they keep chanting, they'll be purified. Right? And then give up that desire for that.
Does that Krishna give them that?
If it's devotees, Krishna's arranging. See, the difference means, but depending upon the level of advancement, he may directly himself arrange it, but generally Maya arranges it, right? But it's being given by Krishna for use in service. Does that make sense? So it's given through the medium of the external energy, but it's spiritual. You know what I'm saying? Because Yoga Maya works on Yoga Maya and Mahamaya are the same person. It just depends upon if you see things in connection to Krishna, it's Yoga Maya. See things not in connection to Krishna, it's Mahamaya. That makes sense. But at the same time as Yoga Maya, generally you see function, so natural positions that function within the spiritual world, right? And Mahamaya works within the material world. Does that make sense? But you do have that overlap. Like in Vrindavan, it's a spiritual world, but demons come there and they're controlled by illusion, by Maya. Right? So they're getting a material result for their endeavor. Does that make sense? But devotees may be in the material world, and because they're serving Krishna, then actually they're getting a spiritual result, though they're in the material world. Does that make sense? So the Sarup Shakti can act in either sphere, in either way. Does that make sense? Verse 36 describes the Lord as the object of worship for all living entities. Verses 37 to 40 describe how the Lord pervades everything by being the soul of everything. Okay, so he's the object of worship of all living entities. So even the auspicious proper things, the demons may not be attracted to, but still what they are attracted to is still Krishna. It just gets lower and lower forms. Right? You know, you have the person and you have their shadow. So the shadow is like the person, but not exactly quite. Right? So they may not be attracted to the auspicious, which is the better form. They're attracted by the inauspicious, right? Which are the lower forms. But still, the potency in that is still Krishna. Right? Because if you have one, you have the other. You have light, there's going to be darkness. You just take away light, you get darkness. But it's still dependent upon light. You know what I'm saying? Darkness doesn't stand on its own. Right? Because if it did, then you could bring some darkness, all the light would go away. No, but you bring some light, the darkness goes away. Does that make sense? Okay, now the next verse, how the Lord pervades everything? By being the soul of everything. Arjuna confirms that Krishna is the inconceivable source, the cause of all causes, transcendental to this material manifestation, the oldest, the ultimate sanctuary of the world, the knower of everything and the supreme refuge above the material modes. He is the air, fire, water, and the moon. He is Brahma, the first living creature, and the great-grandfather. He is the supreme controller. Arjuna declares that Krishna is the origin of everything and offers his obeisances again and again. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan writes in his commentary to verse 39, all words describe only you. You are the devatas, Vayu, Yama, Agni, Varuna, and Soma. You are Brahma. Brahma is the grandfather, and you are his father. So you are the great-grandfather. All these forms are you since they are spread out in Vayu and others by being their cause. Since you are the possessor of the spiritual material energies, you are like gold spread in bangles and other objects made of gold. Right? So he's pointing out everything is Krishna. Right? All words are describing only Krishna. Right? So we can say anything. Say, let's take the word and. Right? And means you're connecting something together. So who actually holds things together? Krishna. Is. You know, then it defines existence. But who is existence? Right? The source of all existence. Because he exists, everything exists in him. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, we say the something. Then you're pointing it out as an identity. Like that. Right? But he's the one that establishes relationships and what everything is, and everything's defined by him. Does that make sense? Right? You have a sentence, you have a period at the end, so it's complete. Right? But he's the beginning, the middle, the end. You have the capital at the beginning. That's Krishna, because he starts things. You understand? So there's no word that's not Krishna. Right? So it's just a matter of seeing him there. So great ones are there, because the problem is when you get down to little ones, then it's kind of like, well, that doesn't look very impressive. You know, so for the common person, then only the really big things are seen in that light. Does that make sense? Little things are not. Though, for someone who has knowledge, then they can see God in the most minute. Right? In everything. But otherwise, you start off with, you know, big things. You know, you have so many stars, but he's the moon, right? So, but that is there. He is the greatest. So that special greatness, that's also him. The general point is also him. Does that make sense? So it's here. So he's saying that you are all the devatas, Vayu, Yama, Agni, Varuna, Soma. Because their potency is coming from him. Right? You have the king, you have his ministers. Ministers can only function because of the power of the king. Right? So they're doing their job, but that's because the king is giving them that power. Otherwise they can't do that. Right? You are Brahma, you know, so you're the creator. You're also his potency is Krishna. Right? Same time, he's the source of Brahma. So he's the great-grandfather, the great-great-grandfather. Right? Oh, excuse me, great-grandfather here. And then you're spread out in Vayu, means air is everywhere. So you're spread out through everything. Right? So everything is you. Right? If you're Vayu is supporting everything, so everything's supported by that. Right? And others by being their cause. Right? So ultimately the cause of everything is Krishna. Right? Material world being created from Brahman. Brahman is the effulgence of Krishna's qualities. So everything in the world is created from Krishna's qualities. The illusion is we think it's not his qualities. We think the quality stands on its own. Somebody's very, you know, let's say, righteous. So that quality stands on its own. We think this is a very good thing. Or he's very charitable. So this is very good. But we forget that it's the quality that impresses us, that attracts us. Right? But the point is that quality, that's Krishna's quality. So it's Maya to think that the quality stands on its own. Does that make sense? Right? So that's the point, yes.
So why is it mentioned that air is everywhere and not ether?
Probably because we're dealing here with the demigods, so therefore Vayu is, you know, the demigod there, you know. The Adhara Shakti, that's something a little bit higher, the all-accommodating potency. So to be able to accommodate everything, the space that accommodates things, that may be a bit more subtle for people, because people generally don't worship Adhara Shakti, they worship the demigods. Does that make sense?
So does that mean that air is also there in earth and water. And
yeah, it's all pervading. So earth is there. But it said also, since you are spread out in Vayu, all these forms are you since you are spread out in Vayu, and others by being their cause. Right? So then there's also the opportunity of those who are in the air that's observable, but then that which is not, or one wouldn't see in that context, is that also. You know, it's like saying, you know, you are everything, and that which is not everything, you're that also. You know, so that's the whole point. Right? So it's just saying, just like gold is spread out in all the bangles and other ornaments, gold ornaments in the world. Right? So gold is in everything. But it's all gold. Gold's one, you know, one entity. But it's spread out in there. Right? Does that make sense? Arjuna requests Krishna to excuse him for any informal gestures which arouse out of friendship. Arjuna says, thinking of you as my friend, I have rashly addressed you, O Krishna, O Yadava, O my friend, not knowing your glories. Addressing the Lord with these three names shows lack of respect. Addressing Krishna without the prefix Shri is disrespectful. Addressing him as Yadava is disrespectful because it does not emphasize Krishna's supreme position in that family and because it shows Arjuna's feelings of superiority since he belongs to the more powerful Kaurava dynasty. Right? So Krishna, Yadavas are our moon dynasty. Right? And the Kauravas are sun dynasty. So sun dynasty is always the prominent dynasty, supported by the moon dynasty. So it's very, like when you see the list of kings and everything, generally you always see it's always coming down through the sun dynasty. So let's say someone who is as powerful as like Vikramaditya, right? He ruled for like 2,000 years. But you don't see mention of him in the list. Why? Because he was moon dynasty. So somehow at that time he was the emperor. But generally it's only just the sun line is what's prominent. That makes sense. So they're always supportive unless somehow or another it comes up otherwise. So by calling him Yadava, then you're saying he's in a lower position. Does that make sense? Addressing Krishna as friend is disrespectful because that means the Lord is treated as equal, right? Because he's Asamurdva. No one's equal, no one's greater. Right? So friend means he's equal. And on Yadava means he's junior, right? And addressing him just as Krishna, without the Shri, without that element of respect, then that also just puts him as something common, you know, undefined, right? So since the Lord is the supreme, there's no question of being undefined, you know. He's not just a general category. Yes, yes, because the relationship's different. Remember is that he's gone from looking at Krishna in the friendship rasa to looking him in on reverence.
Yeah.
Right? So because of that element of wonderment, then it's not as strong or intimate. Right? Because wonder, where does wonder come from? It means that we're looking at Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Where's wonder?
Prayojana?
Sambandha. Why?
Because
knowledge of the thing. Yes,
knowledge of the thing and lack of knowledge, not being
understood. There, I would say more on the element of the knowledge, because this other will be an element of yoga maya. But what it means in Sambandha of the two parts, one is just knowledge, and the other one is knowledge and
attraction.
Right, inspiration or like that. So that the knowledge is great, that inspiration is great, but that's where it's mainly situated. So it doesn't have as much of the intimacy as the other ones, then they're more connected with that has that, but there's more connection with the Prayojana. Yes.
So knowledge is Sambandha. What is
it? Knowledge is Sambandha. It's also, but it's applied in Abhideya.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I'm saying? See, this is means why one has to, are you saying? K- college education where you stick everything in a little box with little arrows going from one thing to the other and little bullet points is nice, but the difficulty is there's no such thing as overlap. Mm. As soon as there's an overlap, they turn that into its own category. Mm. You know what I'm saying? It's just like twilight is different from day and night because it's a combination, but what is it made out of?
Day and night.
Day and night, it's not a third entity. But by modern calculation, it would be a third entity. That's the difficulty. So that's why the modern academic brain has a big difficulty in actually understanding the Vedic literature, because it's based on relationship. And the modern academy is not based on relationships, it's impersonal.
So is knowledge kind of the relationship between Sambandha and Avideya?
No, because all the different qualities are present in Avideya. Means in Sambandha, Sankarshan is the field, and what's the correct thing, the definitions, what should be done, who's who, right? But when you apply in Avideya, you still use that field. Means it's happening in the field,
yeah.
Right? Then in Prajumna, then you're in Sambandha, then you're seeing you're confident of the identity, right? So you don't have to define that. And you're inspired by that field because you know you can get things done and all that. So what the field can do. So that inspiration, then that's Prajumna. So that attraction is there, right? Prayojana means that need to gain what could be gained from that field. But that can only be done through action. Right, so the field doesn't mean much if it's not applied. Inspiration also doesn't mean much unless it's applied, right? And intelligence doesn't mean much unless it's applied, right? And then the need is only gained through application, right? And that then increase in the affection or the attachments, the needs, the love, like that. That is all happening. So all those come together in Avideya. So that's why Avideya is the central feature. So that makes Vasudeva the superior out of all four, right? But we can say by establishing the environment, Sankarshan is prominent. So that's why you see when the Vaikuntha Murtis all expand, everyone's expanding from Sankarshan. You know what I'm saying? So even Vasudeva will expand from there. But Vasudeva means he includes all these others. You know what I'm saying? Because you're dealing with that Sankarshan is Balaram, so everything expanding after Balaram technically is Balaram, and Balaram is Krishna, so therefore we can say it's Krishna. But Krishna's unique in his position because he is only the enjoyer, not the servant. Right? Well, Balaram is the servant, right? He's the supreme personality of servant or Godhead. Right, because Vishnu is also a servant of Krishna, right? And Mahanarayan is also a servant of Krishna. But Baladeva is the source of all of them. Right? Does that make sense? So you're going to have that element. So he creates the environment in which, right? The existence in which Krishna is existence, right? And Balaram will be, the chit, the knowledge, and, all the different things like this. And then Radharani Safladini, so the Prayojana. But at the same time as Krishna is the one who performs the activities, he is the supreme subject. Right? So then Balaram is then creating the field. Right? This is where the Achinta Beta Beta Tattva kind of comes in handy. Is that you can work with, intelligence is both Sambandha and Avideya, right? And Balaram is both the lord of the chit potency, but at the same time he is, creating the field. In other words, he's operating the existence. Krishna is performing the pastime within it, right? Because your subject, the combination of subject and object, but it happens in a place, it's locative, right? There's a cause, ablative. So all that's your field. Right. So that's Balaram.
So he's facilitating Krishna.
Yeah. So he facilitates Krishna.
Okay.
But ultimately, all that the primary, you know, the main how you say nouns connected to the verb are the subject and object.
Mm-hmm.
And that everything else comes because of that or is there because of that. You may have the place, but if the subject's not performing activity in the place has no significance. Right? You know, because the activity is being done, therefore a cause has some meaning. You know, somebody's doing something, why is he doing that? You know, you don't ask otherwise. You know what I'm saying? So even though they're still primary nouns, it's still dependent upon the subject's operation of the verb. Right? Does that make sense? So that places Krishna in the supreme position. Yes?
You mentioned that the chit potency is in the sambandha, but there's also...
No, I said abhideya.
It's abhideya, okay.
Yeah. No, it's abhideya. But I'm saying that's why you have these overlapping of elements.
Yeah.
You know?
Chit potency, they all come out of the facility knowledge and the experience gain.
Yes. But at the same time as that's happening in an environment, so that's your sambandha. Right? And there's a goal in that, so that's your prayojana. So it's all dynamic. Yes.
Yeah, Maharaj, I think the abhideya is the most important correct understanding that applies to.
It's not the most important, you could say it's the most important, but it's the central feature of all three, because all three are non-different. But we study it like this so that we, by analyzation, then we increase our understanding of things and also generate a detachment from the mundane. Does that make sense? Because it's all homogeneously blended together, so therefore we find the material world so attractive. So when we break it apart and analyze it, then it starts to not be as attractive. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
Yes. So while doing some service, one should not be like too eager to be in the end or...
You're eager to do service, but then you have to use your intelligence because you have to get the goal. If you don't get the goal, what's the use of the eagerness? You know what I'm saying? So if you don't understand the field, how is your eagerness going to be applied? If you don't know what's the result you can get, then there'll be it won't be of value. Right? So all the qualities are contained in, all the qualities are in abhideya. But of those qualities, certain ones are in sambandha and certain ones are in prayojana. Right? But the combination of all those is in abhideya. Right? So there's a uniqueness of them, but at the same time, all of them are involved in abhideya. That's why the pastimes are the central feature. Right?
So this is what it means to be detached from the fruits of our labor, is to keep the focus on abhideya and not prayojana?
No.
No.
Because Krishna says you should do the activity thinking of Him.
So that's something.
Right? That would be that, but then the result, you're thinking of Him, you're doing it for Him.
Mm.
Right? Because any result comes back to sambandha, right? So... You know, the Aniruddha comes back to Prajumna. So the goal, you need your goal, that's Krishna, right? And so, but the reason you're doing it is to serve Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So the sambandha and the prayojana are functioning when the abhideya is there. That's what I'm saying, they're all combined. That's why it's the... you know, because otherwise you can see the material world, how it functions, the mechanics, everything like that. That's very nice. Krishna says then he's beyond that as the person. In other words, the pastimes are beyond it because it includes everything. So including everything, then it has qualities that are different. Then it includes the qualities of the other, plus it has its own uniqueness. Right? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Potato has a quality. Cauliflower has a quality. Tomato has a quality, right? You know, ghee has a quality. Chilies have a quality. Right? Spices have their quality. And so each one of them stands on its own in its uniqueness and doing something, but you put it together as a sabji, then the sabji includes all the qualities of those on their own, plus it has a quality that's beyond all those individual qualities. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't claim that because you have any one of those, you have a sabji. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why Vasudeva is the central position, right? So that because Krishna and Balaram are non-different, so therefore Vasudeva is actually non-different from Sankarshan because he's expanding from him. But at the same time, as his function is greater than Sankarshan, right? He's the central feature, right? Does that make sense? Yeah, he's the subject. At the same time, that's why we make the difference that this is, in this particular Kali Yuga, that the uniqueness, I mean, so this last Dwapara in Kali Yuga, that this is Swarup, I mean, the Swayam Krishna. Mm-hmm. Right? Because otherwise, it's always just Balaram. Mm-hmm. So this time, it's not Balaram, it's Krishna himself. So you have the original Vasudeva coming with the original Sankarshan. Right? So that's what makes it special. Mm-hmm. Arjuna requests the Lord to show his four-handed form because he is disturbed by fear by seeing the universal form. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 46. In the Brahma Samhita 539 is stated, Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishtan. The Lord is eternally situated in hundreds and thousands of forms. And the main forms are those like Rama, Nishinga, Narayan, etc. There are innumerable forms, but Arjuna knew that Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, assuming his temporary universal form. He is now asking to see the form of Narayana, the spiritual form. This verse establishes without any doubt the statement of the Srimad Bhagavatam that Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and all other features originate from him. Yeah, so this is establishing he's the origin, so all the other, otherwise how is he showing the universal form and then showing Narayana form? Right? At the same time, he's still standing there. Krishna is there the whole time because who is Arjuna offering the prayers to? Right? So this then establishes that he's the original person. Verses 47-55. Only the pure devotee can see Krishna's two-armed form. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Arjuna, happily have I shown you by my internal potency the supreme universal form within the material world. No one before you has ever seen this primal form, unlimited and full of glaring effulgence. So they say, I've shown you by my internal potency. Right? Because Krishna only interacts through his internal potency. He doesn't interact with the dead matter. Right? He interacts with the internal potency. The shadow of the internal potency is the external potency. So therefore, everything works. Right? But he doesn't deal with the internal, external potency. So his internal potency, he establishes You know, he establishes what's happening. Does that make sense? Right? He's already establishing, we said, because it's his potencies that make everything work. So that is what's actually going on. So what you're seeing is that in manifestation of the unlimited varieties of forms that can accommodate that. So in other words, you're seeing all the causes at once. Right? You're seeing the quality that's there, that's Krishna. That's, you're seeing that effulgence, so glaringly effulgent. Then all the different forms that make that up, and then the manifestation within the material energy. Right? Does that make sense? Results that have come, like they go in, everyone's being destroyed. You know, so all these different things are all happening at one time. That's why they're very, very bewildering. O best of the Kuru warriors, no one before you has ever seen this universal form of mind. For neither by studying the Vedas, nor by performing sacrifices, nor by charity, nor by pious activities, nor by supreme penances, can I be seen in this form in the material world. Right, so none of those will get you. So it's only by the grace of Guru and Krishna that this is understood. Right, so here Krishna is seeing it directly. Like that, but otherwise it can only be appreciated. You have been perturbed and bewildered by seeing this horrible feature of mine. Now let it be finished. My devotee, be free again from all disturbances. With a peaceful mind, you can now see the form you desire. Sanjaya said to Dhritarashtra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, having spoken thus to Arjuna, displayed his real four-armed form, and at last showed his two-armed form, thus encouraging the fearful Arjuna. When Arjuna saw Krishna in his original form, he said, O Janardana, seeing this human-like form so very beautiful, I am now composed in mind, and I am restored to my original nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Arjuna, this form of mine you are now seeing is very difficult to behold. Even the demigods are ever seeking the opportunity to see this form, which is so dear. The form which you are seeing with your transcendental eyes cannot be understood simply by studying the Vedas, nor by undergoing serious penances, nor by charity, nor by worship. It is not by these means that one can see me as I am. My dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am, standing before you, and can thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. My dear Arjuna, he who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contamination of fruitive activities and mental speculation, he who works for me and he who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and who is friendly to every living being, he certainly comes to me. Right, so these two are very important verses, actually, these last two verses. So Krishna can only be seen not by any of these other elements, but only by devotional service. Right? Free from fruit of activities and mental speculation. Now, what is that form of devotional service going to look like? This is the fun part. Right? So, basically speaking, it will look. Yeah. So, it will look like study of the Vedas, undergoing penances, giving in charity, by worshipping. You understand? But Krishna just said this is not how he's understood. So what does this mean?
It's about the consciousness.
It's about the consciousness. In other words, the worship itself, the ritual, is not going to catch Krishna. Or by giving away your money, it's not going to attract Krishna, because it's already him. You're moving himself from one place to another, waving around things that are him, and showing him at forms that are him. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You're performing an austerity. Where do you get the potency for that austerity? So that potency comes from him also. Does that make sense? So, and he is the knowledge of the Veda. Right? He is knowledge, remember, the forgetfulness. So basically, it's just by being involved with these activities in connection with Krishna without a desire for any fruitive result or mental speculation, that's what's going to attract Krishna. Right? The activity doesn't change, the consciousness changes. Right? Because otherwise, what are you going to change the activity to? Right? That's the Mayavad conception, is that spiritual means doing something different. Right? So that's why is it such a big discussion? Because we're so overwhelmed by material considerations. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Right, so he's not like that. So it's only by undivided devotional service. And that undivided devotional service means devotional service free from contamination of fruitive activities and mental speculation. He who works for me, who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and who is friendly to every living being, he certainly comes to me. So we've seen this conclusion come up quite a few times. Right? This is actually the main theme, you know, you say conclusive theme throughout the whole work. Right? Because so many themes will be there, but this is the conclusive theme, is that you're going to perform your duties, right? But you're going to do that for Krishna, so then it's free from karma. Right? You're going to do it in knowledge, but it's going to be free from mental speculation. You're going to be remembering Krishna, but it's going to be free from the desire for, mystic cities or any other side things to get distracted by the yoga system. Right? So you're going to be remembering him as a person in devotion, right? The goal of life. And one sentence, who is friendly to every living being. Right? So if you're only friendly to Krishna but not to everybody else, means you haven't actually understood. Right? You can't be nice to the man and disregard his family. It's not going to work. So the point is everybody is in Krishna's family. Right? So one who's that. So these are what's going to make it work. Right? Okay. Krishna says that no one before Arjuna has ever seen the universal form. This form cannot be seen by Vedic study, sacrifices, charity, pious activities, or severe penances. Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport, verse 48, that why are these mentioned? Right? Why these specific things? Yes.
Because they are the activities that the devotee performs.
They're the activities the devotee performs. It's generally what's considered religion. It's generally what people will consider, this is what's giving my results. Is that what you're going to say? Yeah. Okay. So in other words, if I don't have something, I'll study about it. Right? You want something. What's the first thing you do? Go on the internet. Look it up. Try to find out as much about it as you can. Right? Because that you think, that's going to get you your gain. Right? You're going to gain something to study or sacrifice, right? I give up one thing, then I'll get something else. Right? So it means if I didn't get it, maybe my sacrifice wasn't great enough. Right? Or charity. You know, I give away in charity, then I'm pious, people respect me, you know, things work very nicely. Maybe I'm not charitable enough, I'm too miserly, so I'll give away more, things will work out nicer. Right? Pious activities, doing good work. I did something bad, so therefore I'll counter that by doing something good. Right? It doesn't exactly work, but it creates a nice situation. Right? Just let us say you have something to drink, right? Okay, and you put something bitter in that drink. Okay? Now you figure, oh, it's bitter, I have to counter this. So then you start putting some sugar. Okay? Put enough sugar, it will appear that the bitterness has gone away. But still, the bitterness is there and still has its effect. sense. You may not taste it. So the point is the pious activities don't get rid of the bad results that will come from an impious activity. They generate good results in the future. Does that make sense? You can't get rid of karma by doing another karma. Karma only generates karma. It doesn't get rid of karma. But we'll think, oh, if I do a good work, that'll get rid of the bad. No, it generates. Means, in other words, you did something to somebody, made them feel bad. So then you think, I should do something nice. Okay? So you do something nice. But what has happened? Did the doing something nice get rid of that you did something wrong? No. What it did is that you've done something nice, therefore it generates the you know, feeling the other person or the response in the other person that you've done something nice. Right? But now what if you do something bad again? What immediately is going to come up in their mind?
The last
bad thing you did. So it doesn't get rid of it. It's foolish to think. We think of it'll you know, it's, does that make sense? You know, some dirt, you just sweep it under the rug. The rug looks better than the dirt, right? So therefore, it works. But it doesn't mean the dirt's gone away. So the point is, as you perform good work, then you'll get good results. Not that it gets rid of bad results. No, it produces good results. You did something, you lost your money. So you do something that you gain money. Right? So it's not getting... How do you get rid of not having money? Right? By having money. So the endeavor is for the positive. It's not a separate thing that you can get rid of. Does that make sense? That's why Krishna says you get rid of a lower taste by a higher taste. Because you can't just get rid of something. You have to replace it with something else. So lack of money is replaced by having money. But by having money is generated by proper activity. Right? It is lost by improper activity. Does that make sense? So that's where the difference is. The one is not, means if you have money, then there's no, you don't have no money. You know what I'm saying? But you can have no money, it doesn't mean you have money. You understand? So remembering Krishna is the prominent, and never forgetting Krishna is the secondary. Right? Just like we were saying, the day and the night. So you have to know which is which. Which is the support for the other. Otherwise you get bewildered like that, right? Foolish disciple of Paramarthic Guru, right? He was saying, well, I've gone to the market and I bought this butter. And the butter is in a cup. So now, which is the support for the other? In other words, which is the primary? The butter or the cup? Right? Because if I have the cup, but without the cup, you can't hold the butter. But at the same time, if I don't have butter, why do I need a cup? So which one is the actual one? So he was contemplating this, and so he wasn't sure. So he thought, okay, I'll test it by turning the cup over. Right? And then I will see which is the prominent one. Right? So then, you know, naturally the butter falls on the ground, and now he's, you know, he doesn't have butter, and he doesn't need the cup. Right? You know, like that. So then you can see is that the butter is the prominent thing, because what do you need the cup for if there's no butter? Right. Okay? But this is foolish. And then severe penances, right? So therefore I'll be very austere, do something, and that will get it. You know what I'm saying? So these are all the elements that someone thinks by this I can gain something, I can control something. Right? So that's why Krishna mentions these things. Right? Like that. Otherwise you throw in other important things like not by owning an Edsel, you know, not by, you know, having a, what do you call it, a Mickey Mouse beanie. You know, so many different things he can mention. But he mentions these because these will create something that's, this is what people will think is actually how they're getting things done. Right? That makes sense. So Prabhupada explains in the purport of verse 48. So one can perform all these, can accept bodily penance, give charity, study the Vedas, etc. But unless he is a devotee like Arjuna, it is not possible to see that universal form. Those who are impersonalists are also imagining that they are seeing the universal form of the Lord. But from Bhagavad Gita, we understand the impersonalists are not devotees. Therefore, they are unable to see the universal form of the Lord. So here also we see is that the element of the universal form, how it's pervaded everything, is that the impersonalists actually can't see it. They can appreciate that everything's Brahman. You know, Mayavadis don't see anything, so they don't even count here. Right? They're just total illusion. Impersonalists then are only seeing part of the absolute truth. So they see the potency, Brahman, but they don't, it's not specifically differentiated. Right? They can see it pervading everything. So they can see what it pervades. That's why when they walk, they don't bump into trees. Right? Because otherwise, by the Mayavad's concept, you wouldn't have to worry about it, because the tree is an illusion. And your body is an illusion, so you could walk straight through it with no problem. But it doesn't exactly work for them. Right? So only the devotee actually can see. Right? So that's why it's described in the Bhagavatam. Because the devotees can see it. Others can't see it. Does that make sense? So others being unable to see, they'll think they see. Because they think, okay, this is powerful, or this or that. They don't actually understand it's the potency of a person. Right? That's the thing. The Supreme Person's potency is what is the Brahman. So that's what they're seeing. So only the devotee actually can see the universal form. But, you know, as Krishna's pointed out, this is not the greatest thing. Because otherwise, if that was, then one would get so attracted by all that. But that's why this method is being given, so that one understands this is not the highest. Right? Otherwise, one will get stuck in the mechanics. Because what's coming after that, you know, very soon in our next section, is all the mechanics. Right? The metaphysical elements that are used in the spiritual process. So if you're bewildered, so first we've gotten rid of the concept of being bewildered by the gross elements of the mechanics. But then we might get attracted by the subtle elements of the mechanics. Right? So that has to all be gone and understood that they're all engaged. But pure devotional service means there's nothing to gain from that engagement. It's simply to please the Lord. Does that make sense? All right. Otherwise, the gross, you know, or the karma elements, the subtle, the jnana elements, right? Does that make sense? So, one will get attached to the fruit of results that one gets, or the intellectual speculation. These things one will get attached to. But, the point is, we point out, is that devotional service means it's a change in consciousness, not a change in activity. Right? Because the activity remains. So that's what's important. So if you're attached to it, you can't change the consciousness. If you're detached from it, then you have knowledge, then you can. Because physically you're going to be engaged in the same activities, intellectually you're going to be thinking about the same things. But by consciousness, now one goes beyond. Right? Right? One can see the connection of it with the Lord. It's His potency. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. To pacify Arjuna, Krishna displays his real forearm form and then his two-arm form. By seeing Krishna's beautiful form, Arjuna becomes composed in mind and is restored to his original nature. Krishna confirms that his personal two-arm form is most difficult to see. It is the most confidential form of Krishna. Krishna concludes that only by undivided devotional service can he be seen as he is. Now, he's already said that nobody's seen the universal form. So that means it's hard to see. You know, but there he says no one's seen it. He didn't say it was hard to see. But now, with his two-arm form, he's saying, this is difficult to see. Right? So in other words, it's only through devotional service that you can see. Now, since it's only through devotional service you can see both these forms. But we see of it, the focus is on his original form, not upon how he's pervaded throughout the universe. That makes sense? One who engages in Krishna's pure devotional service, free from the contamination of fruitive activities and mental speculation, who thus works for him, makes him the supreme goal of life, and who is friendly to every living being, certainly goes to him. Verse 55. Right? So here, devotional service, which is free from contamination of karma and jnana, right? The fruit of activities and mental speculation. Okay. Then, so that's there, that means he works for him. Right? Because you could be free from fruit of results, so I'm just doing work. But the point is, it's you're working for Krishna. So you'll do the work to get the good result for him. Otherwise, you may, okay, well, you know, the jnani, I don't do any fruitive work, and so I do no work. Right? Because I don't want a result, so why would I work? Right? Why would I cook breakfast if I don't want breakfast? Right? I wouldn't do that. Right? Does that make sense? Right? So the thing is here, is you're doing it for Krishna. Right? That's the point. So you say, well, I need breakfast. So then, therefore, you'll cook breakfast. And so you say, well, I'm not supposed to be interested in fruit of results, so therefore, getting the result of cooking breakfast means that's a fruit of results, so therefore, I don't want that, so I don't cook breakfast. But the point is you also still need to eat. So this is a problem. Mayavadis, technically, according to their own philosophy, should starve to death, but they don't. So they're not following their philosophy quite properly. Right? So then that means is that, but you're cooking it to please Krishna, right? So it's for him. Then that result, then that you can eat. But you're not cooking it because you have to eat. You're cooking it to please Krishna. Yes.
And you're also eating to please Krishna.
You're eating to please Krishna. Yes. You're also washing the dishes afterwards to please Krishna.
Yeah. Let's not get too much into that.
Yes. You're also throwing out the garbage to please Krishna. You know, you're going to the market and buying things to please Krishna. You're dialing the takeout pizza or Chinese place to please Krishna. Right? In other words, you deal with the phone properly. You don't take a hammer and hit all the buttons, you know, like that. So you're doing it according to proper, you know, and you're talking to the person who answers the phone with proper etiquette, like that. Because otherwise, next time they won't fill your order, right? You know, so all these different things here. Does that make sense? So that the person who's taking your pizza order, he is part and parcel of Krishna, so therefore you have to respect him as part and parcel of Krishna. Otherwise, displeasing him, which means technically you're displeasing the Lord, then next time the result of that impious activity of not performing proper, etiquette, will be that you won't get your order next time, or possibly even this time.
You can't counter it by doing pious work.
Yes, and you can't counter it by doing pious work. You know, you're going to have to go to you'll have to call another place or another time when they're off the ship. Right? So many things to think. Means for the irresponsible bachelor has so much to think about, right? You know. And they're saying life's easy, right? You know, yeah. Wait till you're married. You think life, you know, so it's a cakewalk. What do you mean? You know, you got to call up. You know, all these things. You got to throw out the garbage. You know, it's like that. You know. Yeah, I mean, it's like you got to get the garbage not only out the window, but off the fire escape.
Yes,
you know, it's work. You know, it's like that. You know, if you could just toss it out the window, okay, but then you have to open the window. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things.
It's the whole thing.
Okay. Okay, so he's the supreme goal of life. So many goals are there, but all goals that ultimately end up in Krishna. Right? So you're doing one thing, and then that will be part of another thing, and part of another thing. Right? Because remember, we always said this, whenever you get a result of something, it already moves back to as the field of activities. Right? So it wasn't an ultimate goal. Does that make sense? So it can always be moved farther, right? You wanted a house. Now you have the house. Now what are you going to do in the house? You know, okay, so your family is going to be involved with things in the house. So those things are there, but what is the result of those things? So ultimately it has to get to the Lord, right? Once it gets to the Lord, it's not a problem that it moves back and forth because He is everything, so it works fine, right? He is the beginning, middle, and end, so it's not a problem. Right? Your house is not the beginning, middle, and end. Right? That makes sense. Right? Yeah. And then he's friendly to everyone because everyone is part and parcel of Krishna. So one has to deal nicely because it's a matter of everybody's devotees, it's just whether they know it or not. That's all. Right? Everybody's spiritual. But one, the spiritual becomes covered by the illusion. Right? But otherwise, everybody's spiritual. So then that would mean that, according to that, that the problem is that only some people know they're the chosen people. Though technically everybody is. But since they don't know, you're not going to tell them, right? Otherwise, the exclusiveness is lost. This verse is considered the essence of Bhagavad Gita because it gives the method for approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In its purport, Srila Prabhupada summarizes this method as follows, right? Mat karma krit, all work should be done only in relation to Krishna. 2. Mat parama, one should not desire heavenly pleasure or liberation. His goal should be the association of Krishna in his supreme abode. Mat bhakta, one should fully engage in the 9 processes of devotional service without desire for material rewards. Sangha varjita, one should not associate with persons who are against Krishna. Nirvaira, one should be friendly to all. So one can see is that this keeps coming up again and again and again. So Krishna will give a body of knowledge. You know, he'll give the principle, then analyze it, and then bring it to a conclusion. And always when it gets to this final conclusion, it always comes to this point. Right? So that's always. So where you're looking at it from karma, jnana, yoga, you know, pure devotional service, it's always the same. Srila Prabhupada concludes this chapter as follows. In summary, the universal form of Krishna, which is a temporary manifestation, and the form of time, which devours everything, and even the form of Vishnu, four-handed, have all been exhibited by Krishna. Right? So it's a temporary manifestation because these elements of ultimate cause, right, the formal cause and all that, which is there, you won't see that. That will be manifest through the external energy. Right? So you'll only see the operative cause and the material cause. But even that, you won't actually see unless you're a devotee. Because otherwise you think you're the doer and, you know, you created the result. When you did an activity and the material energy transformed. You do the activity through which the energy will transform. But you didn't actually make the transformation. You understand? So only the devotee can see this. Right? Like we were saying, you followed the process. You put the potato, peeled the potatoes, put them in boiling water. And so when they become soft, you'll say, I cooked them. But you actually didn't. You did not make them soft. You followed the process by which they transformed on their own. Right? right? In other words, there are material laws. You follow the laws, the material energy will transform. You don't follow the laws, it won't transform. Because if you're the one causing the transformation, then you should be able to do it whether you follow laws or not, because it's you. You want to do it that way, it should work. Yes? No? But it doesn't. So that's why then only the devotee can actually see what's happening. Does that make sense? Thus Krishna is the origin of all these manifestations. Right? So that's the original cause. It is not that Krishna is a manifestation of the original Vishwarup or Vishnu. Krishna is the origin of all forms. There are hundreds and thousands of Vishnus, but for a devotee, no form of Krishna is more important but the original form, two-handed Shyamasundara. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that those who are not attached to the Shyamasundara form of Krishna in love and devotion, or those who are attached to the Shyamasundara form of Krishna in love and devotion, can see him always within the heart and cannot see anything else. One should understand, therefore, that the purport of this 11th chapter is that the form of Krishna is essential and supreme. So that's what one's trying to get to. Because remember, because from form, you're getting everything else. Right? So that form is beauty. Right? So beauty is the original opulence. All other opulences expand from that. I think that'll... Sure. I guess that would come up next year. As Vishwanath, his analyzation of the opulences. In one of his books, I think he does that. Which opulences? Beauties first. Hmm? Oh,
what you're saying then is form is dependent upon seeing. So saying seeing is the part of the worst. It also says that hearing.
Hearing is, yes. Means your hearing is what's going to inspire. But what we're saying is that, what are you hearing about? You're hearing about that form. When I say, hearing is your main process for gaining knowledge, so therefore for your upliftment. Does that sound good? So that's process, that's the first thing, hearing, then chanting, right? And then remembering. So, but you're hearing and chanting and remembering about the name, form, you know. Okay. So then, chapter 12, devotional service. Bhakti yoga, pure devotional service to Lord Krishna, is the highest and most expedient means for attaining pure love for Krishna, which is the highest end of spiritual existence. Those who follow the supreme path develop divine qualities. Right? So this is your, what do you call it? Pratigya. Right? The you know, the essential point that this chapter is making. Right? It's the highest of all the processes. It's the most easiest. It's the quickest. It's the most efficient. Right? And it gives the highest result. So that definitely puts it as something supreme, right? So it gives you the best result, and it's the easiest to perform, you know, and it's the most, expedient at gaining that result. So kind of like you can't get better than that, or you can't get better than this. Verses 1 to 7, the devotees are higher than the impersonalists. Verses 8 to 12, stages of devotional service. And verses 13 to 20, the auspicious qualities developed as a result of devotional service. Verses 1 to 7. Devotees are higher than the impersonalists. Arjuna inquires of the devotees and the impersonalists, who are the most perfect? So, text 1. Arjuna inquired, which are considered to be more perfect, those who are always properly engaged in your devotional service, or those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the Anman manifest? The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, those who fix their minds on my personal form and are always engaged in worshipping me with great and transcendental faith are considered by me to be the most perfect. Here's one of those ones where Krishna's not quoting, you know, different scriptures or this and that. He just says, in my opinion. Right? But for those who fully worship the unmanifested, which lies beyond the perception of the senses, the all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, fixed, and immovable, the impersonal conception of the absolute truth, by controlling the various senses and being equally disposed to everyone, such persons, engaged in welfare of all, at last achieve me. Right? Means if they're actually doing this, they'll eventually, but this is the meaning that devotional service is the most efficient, because this is very slow, this process. But that means you actually have to see. So you're talking about, you know, thousands or millions of lifetimes, so, you know, not very expedient. You know, if I told you, okay, we have this business, and you're going to invest ₹999 in this. And then after, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years or more, but at least if nothing, your grandchildren will get the benefit, you know? Then we'll, you know, you'll get the results. Right? And then you have another process is you only have to invest, you know, ₹1. And very quickly you'll get ₹1,000. So which of these two deals would you take? The last one. But what about the concept of the the bachelor who doesn't like to make all that over endeavor.
It's intriguing.
So oh, I see.
I think I'm going to stick with the last
one. Okay, you're going to stick. So that works very quickly, right? Does that make sense? So it's efficient. That's intelligent to use that one. So that's what's being pointed out here. You could get there by the other path if you actually followed it properly, because then you have to actually see Brahman and everything. And then you have to see all the activities and how everybody's involved in this, and then how the super soul is controlling all of this. And so eventually then it'll bring you to the point of focus on the Lord. Then you'll learn that the Lord is a person and that he has a relationship. Then you'll take up devotional service. But you could take up devotional service now. You know what I'm saying? So that's the... For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested, impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. Right? Because you have to give up all attachments to the body, so that makes it very difficult. Yes. No, the point is, someone who is knowledgeable and pious and has the right, you know, then slowly after many, many births, they come in contact with the, you know, authorized, you know, sampradayak or parampara understanding of the absolute truth, right? Then they are able to take up the process. So it's understood if someone is able to be interested in or relate to Krishna consciousness, that means they've already done all other activities before. Right? And so there's nothing of specific interest that, oh, I haven't done that. You know? Well, everything's been done. And so now one can see, and it's not just because one's done it, it's because of the proper cultivation and association. So one's been in association of devotees, one's just never taken advantage of it. So when that increases, at some point, one consciously takes advantage. Then that brings you to that position where you can actually understand. Does that make sense? The other way, you know, festivals are happening around the world, different things are happening, so people are coming in contact with devotees in the devotional process. So they're becoming purified. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're becoming, you know, taking it seriously. Does that make sense? But those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me, and being devoted to me without deviation, engaged in devotional service and always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me, O son of Prita, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. Right? So here in another way, he's saying the same thing again. So giving up their activities to me, that doesn't mean the activities aren't performed. It means the results are for the Lord. So like that. And as one's doing that, remembering the Lord, thinking of the Lord. So that all works very nicely. So, Prabhupada writes in the purport, and so, factually, there are two classes of transcendentalists. Now Arjuna is trying to settle the question of which process is easier and which of the classes is most perfect. Remember, he already kicked out the process of yoga being too difficult, like trying to control the wind. You know, that's what it would be like trying to yoga system to control the mind. Sit there in one place, do nothing. Right? Stare at the tip of your nose, control the breath. You know, that's going to be very difficult. So he's already rejected that. Right? And so now he's trying to see here, okay, what's going to be, what, which was going to work easier here? Right? So here we see, you know, the savior for our, how do you say, our bachelors is here, even a grihastha, and a qualified grihastha, and a kshatriya on top of that, so a real go-getter, is still looking for the most expedient method. Right? Because someone who is efficient and likes to get things done still doesn't want to waste time. So he's still trying to work this out. And which of the classes is most perfect? In other words, he is clarifying his own position because he is attached to the personal form of Krishna. He is not attached to the impersonal Brahman. He wants to know whether his position is secure, right? Because he wouldn't want to be attached to personal form and find out the impersonal is actually higher. Right? Because some people will say that. So he wants to have this concluded. He wants to know, okay, the impersonal manifestation, either in this material world or in the spiritual world of the Supreme Lord, is a problem for meditation. Right? So that means, because this impersonal manifestation is all-pervading. Actually, one cannot perfectly conceive of the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth. Arjuna, therefore, wants to say, what is the use of such a waste of time? Interesting note, because we'll say the Brahman is what's in, but you have the spiritual world, Brahman, the material world. But technically, Brahman is everywhere. But because it's the manifestation of the spiritual world, you don't notice it. The manifestation of the material world, you don't notice it. So you only notice it when there's nothing and there's only light. Does that make sense? Right. So spiritual world is self-effulgent. Material world is not. But what is effulgent and attractive here is that Brahman. Right. What we'll consider is nice and shiny. You know, that's Brahman. Right. So that's the last step. If nothing else works, you've already made it big, you've already made it red, you know, then you make it shiny. So that shininess, that glitter, that's the Brahman. Does that make sense? So, but we think it's matter. And so that's an illusion to think it's matter. But then to think that Brahman stands on its own without coming from the person, that's also an illusion. Right? A more subtle illusion. So both the karmis and the jnanis are an illusion. So when you understand, no, it comes from the person. So that's why even the great impersonalists can't understand this universal form. Because there's still an illusion, because if you think it does, you don't understand its nature, you know, you don't understand its origin, it means you're an illusion. You know, it just stands there on its own. Therefore, Arjuna wants to say, what is the use of such a waste of time? Arjuna experienced in the 11th chapter that to be attached to the personal form of Krishna is best because he could thus understand all other forms at the same time, and there was no disturbance to his love for Krishna. Right? Because the other forms, it distracts his love for Krishna. Right? The one, it creates on reverence, but fear. And then the forearm form will just on reverence, no fear. But then his natural relationship with Krishna is friendship. So then that works very nicely. This important question asked of Krishna by Arjuna will clarify the distinction between the impersonal and personal conceptions of the absolute truth. Right? So that's the, how you say? That's the nature of opulence, is that it never stays in one place for any length of time. Right? So it comes, sits for a little while, then on its own, spontaneously gets up and walks off. Right? So if you can appreciate that, you won't be disturbed, and you deal with the energy appropriate to the situation. If you're attached, then you will be disturbed. Yes? Krishna, okay. Krishna answers that one who concentrates upon his personal form and who worships him with faith and devotion is to be considered most perfect. See, now one's detached. Then the opulence is comfortable. So it can naturally come back. But if you've made it uncomfortable by your attachment, then it goes away, and it takes a much longer time to convince it to come back. In verses 3 to 5, the Lord describes the process followed by the impersonalists. Impersonalism is an indirect and difficult path. By controlling the senses and rendering service for the welfare of all beings, the impersonalist finally achieves the Lord by that indirect process. Notice this here, he has a concept of supreme and he is doing welfare for all beings. Right? So that what constitutes it is something that the living entities can relate to. Because whatever you're dealing with, any philosophy, any religion, it has to have a supreme and has to have the idea of good work that will benefit others. Right? Because if there's no supreme, there's no goal. Why will you work? Right? And that if the process is recommending good work, right, detached work, then that means if people are doing detached work, means you can get some. If everyone's doing work only for themselves, you may miss out because they're better at it than you. But whether you're good at it or not, you'll get something because everybody's working for everyone else's benefit. Right? You understand? So underlying the element of that security, the gain and safety is still there, even though you're dealing with the person, you know, both the karma and jnana. Does that make sense? Right? Is that a... Means you say there's Brahman, but you're going to get something from Brahman. I'm going to, so I'm secure that if I identify with it and I make that endeavor, I will obtain it, and therefore I'll be happy. But technically, that's also karma. Right? So that's why they end up ultimately with the same result. You know, here. So that means then, if you follow it in connection to the supreme, it's proper without illusion. Then it also will end up the same result. But just it's more hard. You know what I'm saying? It's easier. I did the work, I got the result. Right? Or, I don't do the work, I detach myself, I spend thousands of lifetimes like that, I finally get liberated and then sit there for, you know, unlimited amount of time. And then fall back into the world, you know, as a blade of grass, then get eaten by somebody, right? And then, you know, become a child, and then I come out again, and then I do the work, and then I get the result. Right? You understand? So it would be much easier. So that's the problem with the system. For those who are embodied, this path is very troublesome. The impersonal path is inferior because those who follow it are in a state of suffering. This suffering is caused by the unnatural attempt to superficially separate the senses from the sense objects and to fix the mind on something inconceivable. After much trouble, the impersonalists attain Krishna in his form as the impersonal Brahman. But what's special about this particular moment? I mean, just, we had like six people or five people walk out.
Breakfast.
Hmm?
Brahmachari kids and breakfast.
Ah, it happens at 9. If you're not there, then it doesn't happen.
It's just every devotee for himself, I think.
Okay.
Maybe you should have a buffet installed.
Oh yeah, that might. We might even get more people coming. Yeah, yeah. So, where are you going to? Oh, going for class over there. Why? It's good class? No, great prasad. Who cares about the class?
Remember that plate, but not that book.
Yeah. So what do you do there then? Oh, I chant my rounds. After much trouble, the impersonalist attained Krishna in his form as the impersonal Brahman. Okay, so here he's even saying is the impersonal Brahman. So now it's now whether they're able to go from that forward. It's possible, but we see very limited examples. Right? We see tons of examples of you know people performing pious work and getting the results. We see tons of devotees performing devotional service and getting the results. We only see two examples of impersonalists becoming devotees. And other than those two, we also don't find any examples of anybody obtaining liberation. So it appears the obtaining of liberation and getting from that liberated platform to devotional service is extremely rare. Right? So it's like... According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, in verse 4, Krishna says, they achieve me because Brahman is non-different from him. The impersonalists are not denied the highest, but said that it was the supreme, right? Devotional service gives the best. So the impersonal path, very difficult, you get the lowest result. Right? But the other one, then you get the highest result. The impersonalists are not denied the higher stages of spiritual advancement, provided they approach Bhagavan Sri Krishna through the medium of his pure devotee. Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport to verses 3 to 4. Those who do not directly worship the supreme Godhead, Krishna, but who attempt to achieve the same goal by an indirect process, also ultimately achieve the same goal, Sri Krishna. After many births, the man of wisdom seeks refuge in me, knowing that Vasudeva is all. When a person comes to full knowledge after many births, he surrenders unto Lord Krishna. If one approaches the Godhead by the method mentioned in this verse, he has to control the senses, render service to everyone, and engage in the welfare of all beings. It is inferred that one has to approach Lord Krishna. Otherwise, there is no perfect realization. Often there is much penance involved before one fully surrenders unto him. I see. So eventually one will want to know, because one gets the jiva, the inherent nature is activity on the transcendental platform. So at some point, one has to come to that determination. The spiritual emancipation of the impersonalists is possible because they accept that Krishna's body is transcendental. Right? They can get liberation because they say, it's Brahman, it's transcendental. So therefore, they can do. Or the yogis, the form of Vishnu is transcendental. So if they become merged in that, then they can actually become liberated. Right? But if they think he's illusion, then what will they merge into? Right? Because they're thinking, well, no, Brahman. But Brahman is coming from the form. Right? So does the light work if it's not connected to the powerhouse? Right? You just have a light bulb, just go on. No. So the Brahman is not on unless it's connected to Krishna. It's his effulgence. So to say, well, there's only Brahman, right, and that the form is Maya, then that means you know about the form and you say there's no connection. So that means what you're dealing with is not actually Brahman. So if you take the, how you say, Brahmanness out of Brahman, what do you end up with? Be able to use that same philosophy, but get an actual realistic result. Atheism, yes. In which form?
Buddhism.
Voidism. Right? Because voidism means there is nothing. So that would be actually what they're saying, because if you take away the form, then there's going to be no effulgence, so that means it'd just be nothing. Right? But at the same time, there is no such thing as nothing. Right? Because God is all, you know, is everything, so there's no such thing as nothing. So even that's improper. But it would be closer to actually being correct. Right? Does that make sense? But it's still wrong. So for those who were, you know, in other words, those who are Buddhist by their philosophy and everything like this, then you keep basically the same philosophy. You just turn, it's not for them much of a difference to turn it from a void into, you know, a light. You know what I'm saying? It's an all-pervading element. Just one's light, one's dark. But when one analyzes, they're actually quite different. Right? Because actual Brahmavadi doesn't say the form is material. They'll also say the form is spiritual. Because everything's spiritual. But just they're not interested in the form. They're only interested in the Brahman. Does that make sense? So that's why impersonalists, meaning those who are Brahmavadis, they're not actually offenders. But impersonalists that are Mayavadis, they're offenders. Because they'll say, you know, the Brahman is transcendental, but the form's not. Well, actual Brahmavadi will say everything's transcendental.
So Mayavadi, he will not say that consciousness is a result of matter?
Yes. Because actually, you being conscious means you're an individual. So if you, and so since everything is one, there is no individuality, means there's no consciousness.
But a Mayavadi will admit that.
They'll admit it, but the problem is then they won't dwell on it.
Okay.
Because if they dwell on it, then there's going to be a problem, because the reason that they're engaging in this impersonal realization is to become happy, right? Supremely happy. But the point is unless you can perceive it, how do you know you're happy?
Exactly.
Right? In other words, happiness is the difference between two things.
In the context.
Yeah, so we're taking, okay, I'm here, I'm engaging my senses, you know, on a lower, you know, level, and I perform a pious activity, and I can elevate myself to the heavenly platform and get more pleasure, right? But now what's the difference between my position in the heavenly planets and here, right? It's great, but it's not as great, right? You know, here up to the antariksha, not so much, so happiness is less. Here up to the, you know, heavenly planets, more, so like that. Up to Brahma's planet, more again, so greater. But now you have the Brahman. Now that's so far different from the material existence and the Brahman. So therefore, they could claim that the happiness of attaining it should be the greatest. Why? Because the difference is the greatest. But if you remove the difference, where's the greatness? So there's nothing. So there is no Brahmananda, according to their understanding. So they don't even know their own philosophy. That's the problem. Because you can't know the actual impersonal philosophy properly unless you know the personal. Because the impersonal is coming from the personal, not the other way around. Anyone who denies the spiritual nature of Krishna's body is doomed in all his efforts, as is stated in verses 9, 11 to 12. Avajananti mam mudha manushim tanumashritam param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the supreme lord of all that be. Moga sha, moga karamano, moga jnana, vichetasha. Rakshasim, asurim, chaiva, prakritim, mohinim, shrita. Those who are thus bewildered are attached to my demoniac, Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruit of activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. Right? So when one has these improper views, one's attracted, then that means all one's knowledge will be, all their culture of knowledge will be lost. If you don't have knowledge, how anything will be successful? Right? So that's why if you know about Krishna, then that knowledge will make you successful at anything. Right? If you don't know about the Lord, then your knowledge ultimately is going to be your defeat. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? The man, he studies well. He gets his honors. He gets high degrees. He gets his professorship. You know, he gets his, what do you call it? Tenure. He gets the chair. Right? And so his knowledge seemingly has gained him all this. But now with time, because we're dealing with an atheistic culture, right? That means the knowledge is not fixed. There's no conclusion. So with time, his knowledge, because now by the time he's gotten there, he's in his 60s and 70s, right? And so his knowledge is actually very old in the modern academy. Right? Because modern means just what's recognized and present. So his knowledge now will be his defeat. And it's because of his knowledge that he's removed from his place and someone else takes that place.
And he suffers because he's attached to that
knowledge. Yeah, and he's attached to that knowledge, so therefore it's... Right, so that's what it says, in that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruit of activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. Right, they won't progress. Material benefits are lost. You know, they're being freed from the material entanglement. You know, it's not there. In verses 3 to 5, the Lord describes the troublesome process followed by the impersonalists. In verses 6 to 7, he contrasts this difficult and indirect process with the direct and easy method followed by the devotees. Unlike the impersonalists, the devotees are taken care of by Krishna personally. Those who worship Krishna, giving up all their activities unto him, and are devoted to him without deviation, engage in devotional service with their minds fixed on him, and are quickly freed from the ocean of birth and death by Krishna himself. As Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport. The purport of this verse is that a devotee does not need to practice the Stanga Yoga in order to transfer his soul to the spiritual planets. The responsibility is taken by the Supreme Lord himself. He clearly states here that he himself becomes the deliverer. A child is completely cared for by his parents, and thus his position is secure. Similarly, a devotee does not need to endeavor to transfer himself by yoga practice to other planets. Rather, the Supreme Lord, by his great mercy, comes at once, riding on his bird carrier Garuda, and at once delivers the devotee from material existence. Although a man who has fallen in the ocean may struggle very hard and may be very expert in swimming, he cannot save himself. But if someone comes and picks him up from the water, then he is easily rescued. Similarly, the Lord picks up the devotee from this material existence. One simply has to practice the easy process of Krishna consciousness and fully engage himself in devotional service. No, here he says, the Lord comes at once, riding on his bird carrier, and at once delivers. Right? So he's repeated that twice. So meaning it's immediate, like that. So we can understand here is that, you know, at once means it's now. It's happening now. You know, there may be some time, but this is not a great amount of time. We're engaged in the process, so that's the present. Right? You know, wanting something in the future of material, there's a separation of time. Right? But Krishna and the service are non-different, so you're already in contact with your object, your goal. Right? So it is the present. So the devotee functions in the mode of goodness. The others are in goodness, I mean in passion or ignorance. So therefore there's so, there's, it's so, so difficult. Right? So at once it's there. Okay. So, okay. In the next five verses, 8 to 12, the Lord describes different levels of advancement in bhakti. Okay, so we'll continue there tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Shri Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jai Nitai Gaur Purnam.